Welcome to the Big Mike Fund Podcast, where you learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secured retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in, because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. I'm the Big Mike, Mike Zlatnik. Today, it is my pleasure and a privilege to welcome Selena Kulkarni from the land down under. Hi, Selena.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm great. And how are you?
Yeah, doing really well. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you very much for coming on the podcast. So Selena has great experience in real estate, in financial planning, helping folks make investments, plan their real property strategy. And she started her career at the Deloitte and spent some years as an accountant. And she traveled the world working in London, Hong Kong, New York. And she's been an investor in real estate for many years now. Her most recent venture, she launched Phoenix Wealth a few years ago. She is a certified property investment advisor. What else have you been doing lately? What's been exciting?
That's a pretty good summary. I've very passionate about working with people and helping them create wealth through property.
That's great. So how things are different in Australia versus the United States? How do people approach real property investing?
The nature of the Australian property market is very different to the US market. My experience with the US is you're predominantly investing for cash flow. Obviously, there's exceptions to that, but in the Australian market, our median house price is significantly higher than in the US. The average house price for a very modest home is somewhere between $600,000-$700,000, which means that obviously it's a large asset to start with when you talk about, you know, needing to buy it. The idea of buying properties outright just doesn't happen, very, very rare instance in Australia. So we're relying very heavily on the banking system here. I think the main thing from an investing point of view is that you're investing predominantly for capital growth rather than cash flow. So the strategy is probably significantly less dynamic. There's significantly less creativity in terms of the way that we transact real estate here. And possibly because of the level of conservatism that we have in Australia and the way that we transact, it's not a fast-paced strategy for wealth creation as it is in the US.
It sounds to me that general investing in Australia is similar to investing in major metropolitan cities in the United States. Just like New York City, San Francisco, the investments are focused a lot more appreciation than a cash flow. So that's a very well understood difference between cash flow investing and sort of appreciation driven focus. How did you become a real estate property investor? How did you get into the real estate investing?
Well, interestingly, it was my husband who was first and foremost the avid investor between us. I remember when we first started investing, I was very resistant. I almost wanted to turn a blind eye, and he would put pieces of paper in front of me and say, here, sign this, and I would blindly sign things and just kind of let him do what he wanted to do. And, you know, for me, there was a realization very early on in my career that accounting, you know, being an accountant wasn't a great fit for me. Around the time we started to think about having children, I decided to actively look at what he was doing. And you know, I kind of really went all in. I started to educate myself. I sought out some amazing mentors. And once I kind of started to grasp that property can actually be a very creative space, what that made me kind of do is really want to embrace it as a business. And I kind of said to my husband, you know, like, step aside, I'll take it from here, because, you know, I could see a much more clear path than what we'd been doing. So it probably wasn't a deliberate thing that I did. It was more accidental, but yeah, I've felt very attuned to the asset class from the get-go.
not every family can work together, but it sounds like your husband gave you a good boost and then you've taken the lead now. So
Yeah, he's totally in the back seat now.
Sometimes it's better that way. So makes a healthier and happier relationship. So
totally.
What is your best kind of approach to real estate investing? Do you have a unique strategy? Do you have something maybe unique to Australia, maybe unique to you? What has worked for you? What is your favorite strategy?
One of the things I'm a huge advocate of is making sure that when it comes to property investing, that you get into the right car, that you select the vehicle that's a right fit for you. If you take a global mindset and you think about not only the strategies that are available in the Australian market, but the strategies that are also available within the US market, it's a huge buffet of possible strategies. Now, I come from the school of thinking that not one size fits all. It's really important, especially when I'm working with people individually, for me to understand what is their risk profile, what are their means, what are their aspirations, what major life milestones are really going to dictate which strategies they adopt. Because I can tell you that some people who are incredibly ambitious and have the right mindset will be significantly more aggressive around their property investing, whereas somebody else might have fairly modest expectations and I guess aspirations around wealth. And so they may say, oh, look, I only need two properties. That's it. And I'm done. And my level of conservatism means I will only buy this sort of property. So I don't necessarily advocate lots and lots of different strategies. I'm more about making sure that the strategy that you pick is actually a good fit. And so I like the word investment agnostic, because I really believe, and I think you share a lot of these values as well, Mike, that there are different strategies for different times in the cycle. There are different strategies for different seasons of your life. You know, as you get older, you want to, you know, tend to err on the side of conservatism. When you're younger, you can have a slightly bigger appetite for risk. So I don't know if I've answered that particularly clearly, but I guess I think the constant inquiry about where you are in your life and what feels good for you is really important. And so therefore, going into strategies with your eyes wide open is really important.
I think this was really, really good from the point of view of like a financial planner or financial advisor or strategic coach who helps somebody develop their own diversification or investment strategy. I listened to everything you said, and I'm hearing you advising a client, somebody you're working with, and understanding their life situation, their life goals, their available capital, the amount of risk they're willing to take. So all those things combined together is what you use to help them design a strategy. For somebody, it could be bigger set of properties, could be maybe a little more diversification. For somebody else, it could be a concentration of risk in a single asset because they can't tolerate higher risk and then they have the ability to deal with it. So what do you think is the biggest challenge for Australian investors today? So let's use an example. I'm in the US. You have Australian investors. What challenge do they face? Is it the challenge that they're too far away to make an investment in the US? I'm assuming that they are obviously familiar with investments in Australia. So for now, let's just talk a little bit about potentially Australian investors taking the leap of faith and crossing the Great Pacific Ocean and getting into the United States. What is the biggest challenge for them?
Just in answering that, I'll just give you a little bit of context. I first became interested in US real estate back in 2009. So that was really, in my mind, the first time in history where the US property market even came onto the radar of Australian investors in terms of an opportunity. Unfortunately, what happened was a lot of people jumped on the bandwagon to exploit the fact that housing prices had plummeted, and a lot of Australian investors got burnt by putting their faith in the wrong people, not understanding the market, not doing due diligence, a whole bunch of different factors. But what happened out of that was there was a stigma that came out of the US property piece, which was that investing in the US can be lucrative, but it's a high, high risk strategy. And unfortunately, the interest in the US market kind of peaked maybe around 2010, 2012. And then in terms of its, being on people's radar has kind of died off again. And that probably correlated to the fact that the Aussie dollar at one point was on par with the US dollar and now has fallen back to its long-term average, which is about 70 to 75 cents versus the US dollar. And so all of those things have had a contribution to the way that people perceive US real estate. I started educating people in Australia around US real estate quite a few years ago, and I'm such a huge advocate of due diligence and making sure you're doing business with the right people. So my view of what gets in the way now of Australians from participating in US property market is they don't know how to access the market in a safe way when they're based over here. Most investors don't have the time, resources, or energy to just take time out to go over and explore it themselves. So there are not many people who understand the market very well and can offer that opportunity to be a conduit to good people.
So from what I just heard, number of investors, they start entering the market at a good time because 2009, 10, 11, the market was... Real estate was at a significant discount. The opportunity was to come in and pick up properties, sort of maybe not cents on a dollar, but a pretty good discount.
Yes.
But the connections were not there. So there must have been a number of investments with unscrupulous people who took advantage of the investors, created some bad taste. And that's part of the challenge, investing far, far away. U.S. is one of the best legal systems or safest legal system protecting rights of investors, but they're still far away and there's no protection against scoundrels. You could be local and could be swindled.
Absolutely.
Somebody who is a con artist. So,
yeah,
I get it. That's back to the challenge. Anytime you invest, the rule number one, before you invest, you have to know, like, and trust the person and the organization.
Absolutely.
Because there's no other way. You can have a clever marketer, very successful salesperson who'll sell you anything. If you haven't had time to learn who they are, you're just never going to figure out that they're walking you down the wrong path. So I hear it. And the other interesting point, the FX. Yeah, that's been the story. Not just U.S., I think Canada has had the same issue. Not just Australia, but it's also Canadian dollar weakened in relation to the U.S. dollar. And there's not much you can do. I mean, it is what it is. It is a reflection on the U.S. economy picking up momentum. U.S. economy been rolling full speed ahead, so strengthened the dollar.
Yes.
So looking forward now, what do you think they should do? Should they look for big U.S. investments? Should they look big funds, real estate investment trusts? Or should they continue to stay small, try to build relationships with the right folks and make sort of precision investments instead of looking at REITs because they're diversified, they're publicly traded, they feel safer. So what do you think from the Australian perspective? Is that a good strategy now?
You know, the thing to understand about the average Australian investor is that they're fairly conservative. My view of the Australian property market is the capacity to create wealth quickly in this market is fairly limited because we're so highly regulated. You know, finding opportunities right now when there are quite a few government interventions going on is becoming more and more challenging. Two of our major capital cities.
Get rich quick schemes are gone.
Get rich quick schemes are gone.
I wouldn't ever recommend anybody try to make money fast in real estate. Real estate
totally.
Is the steady Eddie. It's
steady
a long term for wealth building, not get rich fast scheme.
Yeah, totally. And I say to people, get rich slow. That's exactly. How it is. Get rich slow. So Look, I kind of feel like as an Australian who's been investing here for a couple of decades now, I love the Australian market from the viewpoint of stability. I see that there are opportunities here in Australia to make chunks of equity through various different strategies. But I'm also very mindful of the fact that working with the banks has become incredibly difficult. They have really tightened their purse strings and they're making the, you know, the challenge of borrowing harder and harder. So I think as a point in time, that makes this the perfect time to be considering or reconsidering investment in US property. If I were to kind of talk about the different strategies that I see in the market over there, I would say as a foreign investor, you should be erring towards more conservative opportunities. And that's why things like the private fund appeal greatly. Or if you're particularly partial to holding direct real estate, that you should be doing that in A and B class properties only. It is much better to accept a lower income stream or a lower yield on a property than to be chasing the high yield, high risk stuff. You know, I've certainly done that in the past and I've, you know, come out relatively unscathed. But as a foreign investor, it's a significantly more hands-on approach than if you can opt for the more conservative, as you said, steady Eddie type approach. And, you know, you want set and forget investments, when especially when you're taking them the money offshore. And what I see about the US market that's probably very different to the Australian market is that very high rate of return for relatively low risk.
I don't know Australian market, so I can't argue, but I think US still has a lot of great opportunities. I certainly concur with you that risk-adjusted return is still strong in many real estate subclasses. I, as a fund manager, absolutely try to invest in the opportunities that present safety first and then the upside second. So that's why we love great cash flow, moderate leverage, value add type of investments. We do look for good upside projects too, development and redevelopment. So.
Yep.
U.S. is certainly a great market. I don't know any other market. I don't think I'll ever go to another market. With all due respect, I would love to come to Australia on vacation, but as a real estate investing opportunity, I prefer to stay local. So a little bit biased because I'm here, but U.S. certainly is in good shape right now. Who knows what's going to happen in the future? So let me ask you a couple of other quick questions about... you are a financial investment advisor, in essence. So how much money is enough? As people plan for retirement or whatever they were trying to do, most people just continue to save. They invest, and at some point, they don't know if they have enough. Is it 5 million? Is it 2 million? Is it 10 million? 20 million? Well, I guess it depends for who. But
yep.
How do you approach that problem?
I think the answer is obviously different for everyone. And part of my journey with anyone is to help them explore how much is enough. But the bigger, I think, challenge that people have is even if they go about creating a massive capital base. So let's say come the time that they're thinking of retirement, they've got somewhere between $2 and $5 million worth in net assets. The challenge is how do you transition or harness that capital to create cash flow. In the Australian market, in theory, you can earn a good yield on a typical residential property is somewhere in the vicinity of 5%. Now, if you take away the leverage component of that, really you're earning after interest maybe 1% to 3% of the value of a property. And so it's a fairly poor return in terms of real cash flow. And that's why I think the bigger question that people need to be asking themselves is not just what's the asset base that I need come retirement, but also how do I harness that into a reasonable cash flow? So, for example, if you get to retirement and you only have $1 million, but you can consistently earn 100, 10% on that capital and earn yourself $100,000 a year, that's going to be significantly better than holding $5 million and earning, 2% or 1% on it. So it's not only a question of how much, it's a question of how are you going to deploy and harness that capital. Because if you can't make your capital work relatively hard for you, you don't need it. It's of no value to you.
That's a great answer. You're helping people convert net worth to cash flow. Because in retirement, people need cash flow. Net worth doesn't really mean anything. It's the wealth tied in some asset or assets. And if you can't turn it into cash flow, it is not as useful as it could be. I guess realized gains or realized return on the investment is more important than the theoretical paper piece.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's very true for different stages of life. Early in life, you probably don't need the cash flow because you have a great job. The moment you retire, you need the cash flow. So it's a very good answer. So besides investing for appreciation, does Australia have the same sectors of opportunity like U.S.? I'm just going to mention a couple of great sectors that have been growing here. And I'm just curious if this exists in Australia. So there's a sort of a mini boom happening in the U.S. in the self-storage space. So that whole industry has been years ago, mom and pop, old self-storage facilities. And now they are much bigger with environmental controls. It's almost like you can have an extension of your own living space. You just have it outside of your house. You drive 2 or 3 miles and you rented your 10 by 10 room and you have a wonderful environmental control area. But does that sector exist in Australia? Just curious, is there self-storage opportunities?
Yeah, look, my understanding of that sector is that it's fairly much sewn up by the big players, the national providers.
Yeah.
I certainly don't hear of, small businesses being available. And I believe that if they were available, that would fall less under the real estate banner and more under commercial business type banner. Now, obviously, if they're selling the land with it, then it kind of straddles both. But my feeling is that it's definitely not a strategy that your average mum and dad investor or your individual investor here would have on their radar. You know, I've looked at commercial property. I've never seen a self-storage facility come up for sale. It's not to say that they don't, but maybe they're just not coming up on my search criteria. I mean, the US is so vast and so big and your population is considerably bigger than ours. I don't know that we've matured enough as a country to have many opportunities in that space.
Maybe Australians don't have as much junk to store as Americans do.
Yeah, not sure about that, but yeah, not as big.
The interesting fact, and the moment you think about it, in the self-storage space, there's a rule of 7 square feet per person. So every person in America, in theory, needs 7 square feet of self-storage space. That's how they figure out if there's enough demand in a given area.
People, right.
Hoard junk and they store junk.
Makes sense.
We're approaching kind of the running a little bit out of time, but do you have some suggestions on the best books that you like to recommend to folks? Is there a good book particularly that you love and you'd love to recommend?
The book I'm reading at the moment, which I just find has some quite polarizing insights and very different insights, is The Tools of Titans by Timothy Ferris.
Titans by Timothy Ferris.
Yeah, it's a really entertaining light read, and all he's doing is he's taking insights that he gleaned through his own podcast with various high-profile people and kind of really I like pinpointing their point of difference or their theory on success. And I've found it a very entertaining read and an easy read. And everything from skateboarders through to business people, like really different backgrounds, but who are at some level world class in their field. It's very, very interesting.
So if people wanted to get a hold of you, if they wanted to reach out to you, to chat with you about their real property strategy, Australian investing, or investing if they live in Australia and they would like to invest in the U.S., how would they reach out to you? Is there a website? What's the best way to connect with you?
Yeah, so, you can get me on Facebook, obviously, Selena Kulkarni, based in Canberra, Australia. Otherwise, I do have a website, which is phoenixwealthgroup.com.au. Otherwise, obviously, they can get me through you.
Thank you. But I like phoenixwealthgroup.com. That's easy to remember. That's a great name. So I appreciate once again you coming on the podcast. Thank you very much. And hope we do it again another time.
Pleasure, Mike. Thank you very much for having me. I feel honored.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to BigMikeFund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike Zlotnick. Keep listening and keep investing Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.